Blog Talk Radio.
Us back there. Hey there. Hey, you over there. Come on in. Come on in. And happy Sunday. Happy Sunday, everybody out there. And thanks for joining us once again this morning at our Racetrim Motorsports Garage. And you found us. You found us right here at the Frat House Sports Radio Network this morning. We're going to chat, obviously, a lot of motorsports, some NASCAR. We got to talk NASCAR down in Dover. Not terribly far from where we are here at our little corner of the world. They are running this afternoon the main event of a sprint car action. And what's fun about Dover, this is the first week that we had all three national series come to the same venue. It's been quite a few weeks since we had Camping World Trucks running. We had Xfinity. There's been a couple of Xfinity races. I believe we touched on one last week, and then we had another one yesterday. That ran at Dover as well. And, of course, this afternoon at 1 o'clock, just in time for lunch, we'll be kicking up the FedEx 400 benefiting Autism Speaks. So we're going to chat up, obviously, some NASCAR stuff. We're also looking forward to having a very special guest join us this morning, a writer, an announcer, a broadcaster, a track announcer in the world of motorsports. You might be familiar with him. If not, we're going to get you familiar with him. His name is Mike Neff. He does a lot of writing. One of my favorite motorsports sites is frontstretch.com, and Mike is a writer over there, and I actually do read Mike's articles on a weekly basis. So we're going to chat with Mike about what he does, what he has done in his career, especially as it pertains not only to NASCAR, but also in the world of short track and dirt track racing. So he's going to join us right around 11:30 this morning. So if you all want to get in on the conversation, write down this number now and give us a call. The number is 347-826-9900. Now, just to give you an idea of where we are, our crew chief Brandon's normally here with me. He is on the road today, and we are anticipating that we'll hear from him a little bit later in the show, probably about the time that we start to chat our fantasy and fantasy picks for this afternoon, and that'll be probably after the 12 o'clock mark. In the meantime, I do have Frat House Mike up on the top of the box today. He's running the board for us, and he's going to help bring our guest in a little bit later. So at this point, let me do this. Let me welcome in right now my co-host, du jour, sidekick. Good morning, buddy. You're coming to us live from Frat House Midwest. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
How you doing,
How's
man?
It going?
Oh, it's good.
Well, it's kind of a bittersweet day for me because, you know,
You're counting it down, right?
You know, I've got this awesome, amazing Frat House Sports Midwest Sports Entertainment News complex here. And, well, as soon as this show gets done, I got to tear down the old studio. You know, I got to start breaking it down. And then, you know, once
and we thought, you know, when Letterman quit, that was a big deal.
I'm telling you.
We got to tear down the Frat House Midwest Studios. I can't believe it. We'll bring some stuff, you know, bring it all back here, and maybe we can help you set it up here.
Oh, no!
Once you get east.
You know? So, but, you know, it'll be good, though, because then, you know, I'll be back in the neighborhood with the boys.
Yeah. No, we are looking forward to that. That's going to be fun. And, of course, you've got a lot of, I know, there's a lot of technical and tactical and statistical things you've got to work out, I guess, over the next week. But listen, welcome aboard. It's good to have you with us. We are going to chat with our special guest. We're probably going to hear from our very good friend Russell Lovett also. Unfortunately, Sidekick, I failed before I signed off last week to give a thank you to Russell because he was kind enough to give us a call. If you remember last week, he was chatting about, you know, some of the dirt track racing that goes on down there in Georgia where he lives. He heads out to the tracks. Kind of told us about some interesting things about dirt track racing specifically. You know, he was talking about the Stay Wet XTC product that's used to keep dirt tracks from breaking down, you know, and reduce the dustiness and help folks. You know, I guess if you're a dirt track racer and you have asthma, Sidekick, that's got to be a real bummer, right?
I mean, yeah, that's got to
That's got to suck, right? You know, I mean, it's bad enough you got the dust maybe flying through the air and people get it in the eyes or whatever. But I guess if you have asthma or COPD, why, that's got to be a real bummer. You know, it's a turnoff to folks with breathing issues. But he was telling us about how this product actually works and helps keep grooves and it helps the track actually bond and form and kind of stay wet, but at the same time provide a good racing product. So that's very cool. And we may be hearing from Russell today. It is my hope that we will. And folks out there, we want to hear from you too. Like I say, you can call us up 347-826-9964. Pick up the old phone and give us a call. If you are listening from a computer, if you have Skype, as I do, as Sidekick does, as Frat House Mike does up on the pit box, you can just Skype in from your computer. You can join us in that way. What do you say? I guess we'll kick it up sort of like this, Sidekick. You know, last weekend was the biggest motorsports weekend of the year, right? We had everything. Yeah, buddy.
Yeah, hell yeah.
Yeah, buddy. We had everything. Formula One. We ate our Formula One for breakfast. We had IndyCar for lunch. Then those of us here at Frat House, you know, East, we took a PGA golf and cocktail break from between like 4:30 and 6 when there was a little break in the motorsports. But that took us right to supper time when we had the NASCAR Coca-Cola 600. That ended just around 10 o'clock in the evening here on the East. And then we had a late dessert nightcap with NHRA Kansas Nationals. That took us out to 12:30, 1 o'clock in the morning. Woo! We were gassed out, dude. We were gassed out. How much did you get in out there in Frat House Midwest? Was it a whole day of motorsports for you, or were you hitting them and missing them?
No, I made it through the three races. I did not get to, unfortunately, watch the NHRA.
Mm-hmm.
So,
okay.
Because I was tuckered out at that point.
Yeah, buddy, I'm telling you what. Yeah, so it was an all day. It was all day.
I was still recovering from running my double on Friday.
Yeah.
So,
how many miles was that, dude?
1,100. Just shy of 1,100 miles.
Yeah. How saddle sore were you, or weren't you? I guess you're building up a pretty good resistance.
Well, you would think that Memorial Day weekend, it's great riding weather. Well, no, it was cold as all you know what up in the mountains of Pennsylvania as I'm coming across Interstate 80 there. You know,
wow.
I'm like, are you kidding me? You know, they're talking, but, you know, my phone's going off, talk about it's getting down to 25 degrees. And, it's like, it's like in the low 40s, high 30s when I'm riding my bike. And I'm thinking it's Memorial Day weekend. I'm all dressed, like it's going to be a nice ride. Yeah. I was freezing my tail off.
Wow, how about it? Well, like I say, you can drive anything. We know that.
Yep.
I mean, that's why you're our favorite pilot. There's no doubt about it. I don't know about
it. Speaking of driving anything, wait till you see the pictures this week of me in the moving van, driving the moving van out, towing my mom's car behind.
Oh, that's awesome.
I am going to be driving everything.
Here he comes. It's a convoy, folks. It's a convoy. Yeah. I don't have that sound route for us. All right. Well, here, what we'll do, we're real quick and dirty. We'll just run around and kind of clean it up from last week. You know, in the F1, the French Riviera sidekick, we had the Monaco Grand Prix. We did chat a little bit about it last week, but for those who didn't join us last Sunday or weren't sure, it was fun. It was hard to miss the news of the winner, a third consecutive win for the event, which ties a record amongst just three other drivers. Nico Rosberg, he won the whole darn thing down there. A fellow German driver, Sebastian Vettel, came in second, and most favored to win, Lewis Hamilton from the UK, came in third. He had the pole position, as it turned out. It was fast. It was a fun to watch event in the morning. But, I mean, that wreck, dude, right? The wreck of Max Verstappen had to be the biggest thing.
Yeah. Well, that and the other storyline is I think Armstrong was getting ready to fire his pit crew.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
He led like three quarters of the race. He led like three quarters of the race, and then, you know, they're like, oh yeah, come in pit.
Yeah,
you know?
Well, that killed him. Yeah, that killed him.
Yeah.
Because
he was never able to recover.
No, he was never able to recover. And it's interesting because in that Formula One, and I would venture to say in IndyCar as well, you can pass, but it's very difficult to pass. It's not like, you know, a NASCAR situation where, you know, you have two lines and three lines, and they're running through tiny little streets and hamlets, you know, in Formula One. But I'll tell you, that 17-year-old, the fact he was able to walk away from that wreck, you know, he clipped the back of another driver, Grosjean, and, I mean, he went hard into that safer barrier, amazingly. Like I say, walked away. At the time it happened live, the in-car camera was focused, so the view was almost as though we, in the viewing audience, were in the car with him. Holy smokes.
But yeah.
That was just a spectacular wreck, and he, as I say, walked away. But that was just the beginning. We went back to Indy. Indianapolis 500, you know, one of the biggest races of the year. How big was Juan Pablo McShane? I mean, Juan Pablo Montoya winning that whole winning the whole darn thing after a 14-year break. How big was that,
yeah.
Huh?
Well, and, you know, I'm sitting there, and it's so funny because, you know, I mean, it was a great win for him. But he's sitting there riding around under caution, and somebody runs into him. I'm like, this guy can't catch a break, man.
No, right. Well, you know, at least
jet
dryer.
He's riding around.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, poor. And at that, when he got hit, I'm like, oh, man, that's going to ruin his day. You know,
yeah, you'd think.
But he,
you would think.
You know, they worked on that car and they got him back in there and he pulled off the win. So good for him.
Absolutely.
You know?
39 years old. He won $2.5 million. So that's going to make anybody, I would think,
there
smile.
You
know, it's funny. We have our favorites, you know, drivers, you know, when we talk like stock car racing, and many times we've even said it here at the frat house, you know, wow, that guy can drive anything. You know, whether it be Stewart or Kyle Busch, boy, they get in there. They can drive anything. But, you know, when we talk about a guy like Montoya, he really has driven it all. I mean, my goodness, you know, he's been in F1. He's been a kart champion. You know, he's run Indy cars. We saw him come into NASCAR. You know, he was a Nextel at that point. You know, it was Nextel Cup. Now it's Sprint Cup. But he was a rookie of the year when he came through and into NASCAR. And it's amazing. This guy is really neat. He just seems to cross between all the different series almost seamlessly. I mean, that's I don't know. That's some rare air, right?
Yeah. Well, I'm a little disappointed, or maybe it's just a shame that he didn't get as much love in NASCAR as I thought maybe he should have.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because he when he came into NASCAR, I think he kind of kept that F1 Indy style driving mentality, mm-hmm. where mm-hmm. you were mentioning earlier about, you know, there's not a whole lot of passing, and basically, you know, in that series, and you see it a little bit on the road courses when we race NASCAR, but it's all about, you know, you just, you know, balls to the wall. You go in, you cut a corner, you try to stick your nose in on the inside of somebody and force them out, and that's how you get that pass. It's not like you can power around somebody on the outside, you know, when you're passing somebody in Indy or F1 on these street courses. And he drove with that mentality in NASCAR, and it turned, you know, it pissed a lot of people off, you know, where they were, you know, this guy doesn't know how to drive a car. Well, I beg to differ.
Yeah,
it's
right.
He's too aggressive. Like, he was more, I think he was, you know, more aggressive than Kyle Busch is. You know, you see Kyle, I think Kyle Busch just has that, you know, he was blessed with that skill.
Yeah.
Like, you know, he can save just about anything from a wreck, just about. Mm-hmm. But, you know, whereas, you know, Montoya didn't really have that. He crashed a lot.
Yeah.
Because he was too aggressive. You know, like I said, it's kind of a shame. So,
well, you know, it's interesting because when he did come into NASCAR, he had said, you know, this is wild. I mean, you can actually pass cars here. So I think, you know, he did appreciate the fact that it was, you know, a different style of racing. But yeah, I mean, it's kind of hard when we think of certain drivers that have the skill, maybe an Allmendinger, certainly a Montoya, they are, as you say, they're accustomed to a different style of racing, a little more of a road course rather than a bull ring, rather than a paperclip, rather than a trioval. And it does take, I guess, a little bit of a certain amount of getting used to. We didn't have any doublers this year. There was Threat, Sidekick, but we never had a doubler doing the 600 and the Indy car. Kurt Busch had done it last year, as you'll recall, and we've seen Jeffy do it. And there was chat that maybe Allmendinger would do it, but I don't know if there was no funding or how that worked. But all we got as far as NASCAR was Jeff Gordon driving the pace car.
Yep.
Yeah, that was about
it. On his farewell tour.
Yeah, yeah. How bad does he need, he needs some love. He better win a race here soon. I'm starting to worry. I'm not worried for the guy. I don't think he's worried about me if I can't make the rent or miss a meal. You know what I'm saying? Folks, what do you think out there? How did you like the F1 and Indy car run last week? And before we chat about our Coca-Cola 600, we're going to remind you the number, 347-826-9964. Give us a call and let us know what you think. Let's jump over and just clean it up last week. That was a great amount of fun last week. Coca-Cola 600 down in Concord, Charlotte Motor Speedway. We saw why, Sidekick, the fastest cars don't always equal the winning cars, right? Came down to, it was a fun race, essentially, but it really came down to the last 100 laps to go, and the thing took on a whole different complexion. Strategy came into play among crew chiefs and teams. There were gambles on tire wear and fuel consumption versus getting clean air and keeping your track position. Wow, 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 wow. At the end of it, it was a nail biter. There he was. Who? Carl Edwards. Carl Edwards. Yep, doing his backflip out of the JGR 19 car. This was his first checkers of the season, Sidekick. It was his first win for Joe Gibbs Racing, and it was his first ever at Charlotte. So, I mean, this is a big deal, right? Dude, winning the 600 is like one of those races, right? I mean, you can talk Daytona 500, maybe you talk the All-Star race. You can talk about, well, I won one or both Talladega dates, but this one, this is the one that's pretty special in a career. Is that right, wouldn't you say?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, yeah, to be able to survive 600 miles, you know, because like we were talking about last week, it's, you know, yeah, it's mental, it's physical, but it's also your, you know, bringing your car home in one piece.
Yeah, you know? I mean, that's the thing. Absolutely. And, you know, interestingly enough, we only had 4 DNF, if I'm not mistaken. I was surprised. We thought there might be even more failures for this event, but we didn't really have them, did we?
No. Actually, pretty good, you know. Pretty from that standpoint, it was a pretty good race. Yeah. Now, there's been a lot of chatter about the fact that, you know, nobody, you know, the passing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and how competitive the race was. So we'll probably get into that a little bit later.
Yeah. Just looking over my notes. I'll tell you what, if we had to feel bad for anybody, I guess Truex Jr. was the guy, right? I mean, he was my pick last week in the Eat My Dust. He led a race-high 131 laps, which, you know, when you equate that to miles, pretty substantial. Equally strong, the 41 of Kurt Busch. Of course,
yep.
He led, like, almost 120 laps himself. If there was money on the Gibbs guys, it looked like a safe bet. Hamlin was out front. He had the lead for a while. Kenseth was in the lead for a while. Of course, as we said, you know, there was Carl Edwards. He had the thing. Kyle, you know, holy crow, hats off to Kyle Busch to make this. What was this? His second run since returning. And Erik Jones was ready. He was in the wings in case he needed to be called for relief. But holy smokes, Kyle Busch, man, I give that guy all kinds of props. You know, he had to be hurting. I don't know. He had to be in pain.
I don't know. He didn't look like it. He looked he looked like he was back in his own, man. Like, man, I've been sitting at home on my tail.
I
can't wait to get in this car and drive. Yeah.
Well, what was the turning point? Essentially the turning point was when Ricky Stenhouse, he kind of spun into the wall right around lap 338. And essentially the field stayed out except for Edwards, Biffle, Dale Jr. came in, Gordon came in. So those four guys decided to pit ahead of schedule or off cycle with everybody else. And Hamlin was, at that point, he took over the lead. Harvick was out there. Kurt Busch was out there. It looked like any of those guys were going to be our leader, but they all eventually had to come in and pit. And so with like between 20 and 25 laps to go, they all essentially gave up their track position. And it was really a smart gamble, I guess, by the four guys that came in early. How about Greg Biffle? Is Greg Biffle going to finally find some relevance? Because not only has he qualified, including in today's event, so that's like three qualifying sessions in a row, but all at once it would appear maybe Roush is starting to, I don't know, are they starting to turn a corner? Is Biffle on the fantasy roster? I'm just asking.
No.
No.
That's a rule. Frat House Mike and I have a rule from season one of our frat house, of our fantasy, NASCAR fantasy league. Biffle never goes on the roster ever again.
that
first
is,
year, we sat there and, you know, we would put Greg Biffle on our roster and he would DNF or he'd blow up or he'd do something. We take him off our roster, and heck, dude would win a race.
He had a win, yeah.
And we put him back on our roster, and he'd DNF. So we made the rule that this dude will never be on our fantasy roster ever again.
Ever, 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 ever. Over there.
Banned for life. He's like Pete Rose.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, speaking of Fords, it's interesting because with last week's win, Toyota now moves ahead of Ford as far as a manufacturer championship after a dozen events. They have three, which is interesting. Chevy, of course, is leading the way. They have seven, and Ford just has the other couple. Of course, that would be Kessel and Logano each have one victory. So it's interesting. Maybe Toyota is starting to find you know, whatever TRD is doing, they've developed, I guess, perhaps changes to or outright completely new engines, but it would appear to be maybe a good harbinger for the Toyota camp and the Toyota drivers as they go forward. Another thing that kind of came to mind, you know, with Brett Moffitt, he's a youngster, a rookie, as we know. With Brett Moffitt now secured full-time, he's going to drive the 34 car for Front Row for the rest of the year. He's actually eligible for Sunoco Rookie of the Year. And that's quite good, because going into the year, it looked like Jeb Burton was going to be the only guy as a rookie who had declared at that level. And so, you know, he would be Rookie of the Year, you know, because there was nobody else. But it, interestingly enough, Moffitt will be able to contend for title of Rookie of the Year at the Sprint Cup level. And boy, last week, Jeb Burton failed to qualify again for another race. So interestingly, it's kind of fun to watch those youngsters come up, and Moffitt's one of them. You know, we watched him drive the 55 for a while, and he was in a seat, he was out of a seat. Then, you know, 34 car. Well, now he's more or less been told you can keep that one for the rest of the year, son. So it was kind of nice to see. Now Moffitt's behind in the points by just 9, because Jeb Burton failed to make the race last week. He finished 31st, Moffitt, last week from 40th, and he took care of the car too. So that was kind of a nice thing for him. Speaking of Toyotas, I don't know, David Reagan. I was chatting with Frat House Mike last night a little bit about it. You know, it's the same equipment, but boy, oh boy, that MWR team is not the same as JGR. What's your feeling for Reagan going forward? Think he'll get a win this year?
Oh, man.
Yeah, right.
I would hope so. You know, I really like the kid. I think he's done, you know, he's doing everything that everybody's asking for him, you know?
Yep.
And, you know, sometimes you feel bad. Like Martin Truex, I just think MWR is cursed. You know, this is karma for the stunts that they've pulled, mm-hmm. you know? And I loop, even though, you know, Martin Truex Jr. isn't with MWR anymore, he was part of that whole debacle.
Yep.
And I'm wondering if it's just kind of karma, because, you know, you look at Martin Truex Jr. over the past 2 points races, he's led the most laps.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and yep. you know, and I feel bad for some of the MWR guys, not so much for Itchy Boyer over there, but you know, but yeah. But you know, like I said, you know, Martin, you know, he's, you know, we talked about how he got the raw end of the deal, and, you know, it actually may have worked out for him.
Yeah.
But, you know, God, I'd like to see him get a win. I'd like to see Reagan get a win, you know?
Yeah. Right.
You know, and then our boy Larson.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Larson, we need to see. I'd like to see Larson do something. We'll chat about that going forward. He might be my sneaky pick going for Eat My Dust. Final thought, I guess, before we bring in our guest, because we are going to turn our attention and open the door and bring in our guest, Mike Neff, with us. As I said, from this race, just 4 DNF last week, and I was a little surprised. I had all my back markers for fantasy all blew up and stuff. Allgaier, I had him. He had an accident at lap 135. And Ryan Blaney in the 21 car, his I had him. His engine blew up at lap 281. We mentioned David Reagan. Unfortunately, he almost made it all the way through at lap 353. His engine finally seized. And J.J. Yealey was the only other driver to not finish under power at lap 377. So that actually wasn't bad. That's a testament, I guess, to the mechanics and the crews that, you know, get ready. Because, as you say, this is one of the big ones. That 600, that's just... We're going to the Monster Mile, but you want to talk about miles and miles of Monster, and that Coca-Cola 600 is certainly, that's one of the big ones. So, 347-826-9964, shall we bring in our guest, do you think, Sidekick? Shall we open the door and bring in our guest, Mike Neff, with us? Yeah, good morning. Good morning, Mike. Are you on the
good
line
morning,
with us this morning,
Jen? How are you today?
Oh, we're having a good time. We are, first of all, we're happy to have you, so I appreciate you giving us some of your time this morning. Here's what I'll say, Sidekick, as way of introduction for you and our audience. And, Mike, you are on with yours truly, Uncle Mark, and my co-host Sidekick is with us, so you'll hear from one or both of us. But for our audience out there, Mike is a writer for frontstretch.com. He has two weekly columns, which are up here. Sprint Cup Post-Race Analysis shows up on Mondays. That's titled Thinking Out Loud. And I generally go to that, I'm going to tell you, because we prepare for this show beginning Monday. That's, you know, right after race day on Sunday when it's all over. I start up again on Monday and I start culling through and going through. And I generally find and read Mike's Thinking Out Loud Monday column. And he also appears in the middle of the week. He has a weekly conversation with a Sprint Cup crew chief, and that's published on Thursday, entitled Tech Talk. Now, this past week, you spoke to crew chief Prusha for the Greg Biffle car, and that was very interesting. I enjoy reading that as well because we kind of get the inside, the tidbits. Now, additionally, Mike works as a trackside announcer at two dirt tracks outside of Charlotte, North Carolina, the Millbridge Speedway and East Lincoln Motor Speedway, or East Lincoln Speedway. He's a contributor to, Athlonsports.com, Race22.com. Mike, what did I miss? You've done work on Sirius Radio. Boy, you get around, buddy.
I think you have covered most of it. The track announcing gig is kind of a nomadic, gypsy kind of deal where when different people ask you to do different things, I have had the pleasure of announcing at Charlotte Motor Speedway a couple times for the
very
summer
cool
shootout when Steve Post had to go up to cover the trucks at Eldora. They need somebody to fill in on that Tuesday night. I got to do that. Mm-hmm. I've announced at Southern Alabama Speedway for the home of the Rattler. Got to do a Rattler race down there one time. I've done Myrtle Beach a couple times. So that gets around. And from the contribution side, I think you got it. Race 22 Athlon. Occasionally I jump on there. My main gig is Front Stretch. And like you said, I like doing Thinking Out Loud because, yes, it's a recap, but I also get to throw my little snarky comments in. And I really enjoy Tech Talk because, I mean, I've been doing that for 4 years now, I believe, four or five. And I still learn something just about every week doing that because there's just so much that goes into these cars. And I've got a good mix of crew chiefs right now between Tony Gibson, Jason Ratcliffe, Bono Mannion, and Matt Fuchsia. Those are my four that I have in a rotation this year. And especially Bono and Tony, they don't have a lot of a filter, and they will – tell it like it is and not be afraid to admit when they get in trouble with the folks in the big yellow trailer and tell you why they did. So it's kind of a cool column. I really enjoy it. And I probably get almost as many comments on it every week in emails as I do on the Thinking Out Loud.
Yeah. Oh, it's very fun. And I appreciate what you're saying. And you're right. I would want to do that too. I'd want to be able to talk to them as though, you know, sort of the way you and I are talking here, just a conversation. And when they're forthcoming and they're honest, it certainly translates well to the article. Now, you currently reside in Kannapolis, North Carolina, and that's essentially the hub, right, of motorsports, I guess, in the U.S. But really, I guess you were born and raised, in Indianapolis, Indiana, you know, which is sort of another hub. Now, how did you come to, was it simply a move? Was it for business that you moved from Indianapolis to Kannapolis? And are we reaching you in Kannapolis this morning or are you elsewhere?
I'm actually on 485, the loop going around Charlotte that they are amazingly finally going to complete construction on sometime in the next 2 months. I moved to Charlotte in 1994, and there was a four-mile section of the loop open on the southwest side of town. It has taken them officially 21 years to complete a loop around this town. So it's amazing to me how long road construction takes in the south. But I grew up in Indianapolis. I actually developed my love for racing in the womb. My mother took me to the 1963 Indianapolis 500 while I was in vitro, and from there until 1996, I only missed 400 or 500. Three of those, I was out of the country, and 1 year my folks didn't get tickets. But I went to school at Purdue University, and when I got out of Purdue, I actually lived in Chicago for 5.5 years, and just honestly got tired of freezing my rear end off for no particular reason every winter, and started looking for a job somewhere warm, and by the stars aligning or whatever, I ended up with a 401k software company down here in the Charlotte area and moved down September of 94 and moved to Kannapolis in 2007, but I've been in the greater Charlotte area since 94.
Wow, outstanding. So all of the other, what, media credentials that you bring that I mentioned at the top of bringing you in, that's actually, I guess, what your part-time gig, right? Because you actually are employed full-time doing something else, right?
Yeah, at this point in time, it still is. I mean, you always talk to people at the track, and they always, anytime you ask what's going on, they say they're living a dream, and at this point, that's what it is for me. I've been chasing this riding and racing thing for 9 years. I raced go-karts and what have you before that, but the riding thing started up in the fall of 2005, and I long to get a job in the sport where I get paid to go to the racetrack every weekend. It just hasn't happened yet. So, yeah, at this point in time, it's a very deep passion that I have, but in order to pay the bills, I have to do a full-time job. I work at a call center, actually, in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, at this point in time. So
okay.
I come back to the Charlotte area on the weekend, and at Myrtle Beach during the week doing my paying gig. But keeping the fingers crossed, I keep my name out there, and I get to show up on more and more shows like this cool one, and they get that name out there. Eventually, somebody's going to give me a shot to get a paycheck for this thing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, listen, absolutely. If we can help promote that, that's what we like to do here at Frat House Sports, certainly with our radio network and certainly, you know, on our Frat House Facebook page. Now, give us a sense of some of the small track and dirt track racing that you do announce for. For instance, were you at a race last night at either East Lincoln or Millbridge? Were you able to call one of the local dirt track races?
Yeah, I was at East Lincoln. It's a godsend and a curse being the announcer at East Lincoln because we race a lot. So that's a very cool thing. We start racing early in March. And we go all the way to the end of October every single Saturday night. And so I've cut back my traveling short track coverage schedule. I used to hit 30 and 35 short tracks a year back in the last few years covering short tracks for Front Stretch. But last year I landed at the East Lincoln gig, and I've been there just about every Saturday night. I had actually hoped to get up to Bowman Gray Friday night, but didn't get out of town in time to get up there. But I'm at a racetrack just about every weekend in some fashion, and every Saturday night it's usually at East Lincoln.
That's outstanding. Let me ask you this. Have you seen any, we think of different racers at NASCAR level that like to jump in the carts and they like to run around the track. I mean, Tony Stewart comes to mind, although he's kind of, obviously he's curtailed some of that activity of late. But Casey Kane is one that kind of jumps to mind for me, Jamie McMurray. Have you seen any of like the bigger names at the Cup level come down into like an East Lincoln and run a kart race or anything of that nature?
We'll see the occasional guy show up in the pits at East Lincoln, but unfortunately it's on Saturday night, so most of the time those guys are at the track. The
right.
Cool place is Millbridge Speedway, which
okay.
is out between Mooresville and Salisbury, just north of Charlotte. And we run on Wednesday night. And we do that on purpose, specifically designed to pull in the NASCAR guys. Because most mm-hmm. of the time, NASCAR teams are done prepping for their week's race by Tuesday night, but they don't leave out till Thursday. So Wednesday night was an ideal time to get them out to the racetrack and get them involved in what we do out there. So that's where we get to see a lot of these guys. Last Wednesday, not this past, but the week between All-Star and the 600, we had our huge race at Millbridge, the C4 Challenge. It's our second annual one now. And had 97 cars registered, 76 of them ran or tried to run into the feature for the C4 Challenge, 24 of them start. But they're mini outlaw sprint carts, which is basically a go-kart with a 500cc motorcycle engine and a big wing on top of a cage on top of it.
Wow,
it looks like you took a World of Outlaw sprint car and ran it through the dryer on high for about 3 hours. You end up basically, end up with the same power to weight ratio as a World of Outlaws sprint car in a cart that has about a 46 to 48 inch wheelbase. So they are amazing vehicles. If you want to see them, if you're lucky enough to have NAS TV, which those of us that are on Dish Network have had that ripped away from us, or asunder. But if you're lucky enough to have NAS TV as a provider, watch for it in June. They actually show that race on NAS TV in June, and you'll get to see Kyle Larson ran in it. Rico Abreu ran this year. J.J. Yaley was there. Saldana was unable to make it, unfortunately. McMahon was supposed to be there, and then he wrecked out on Tuesday night at New Egypt, so he had to go home and put his World Outlaw sprint car together, so he had to back out at the last second. But we usually get four or five guys. Tyler Reddick did not run this year. He ran last year. So we get – there's a bunch of those guys that have come up through those ranks out in California that are now running at the cup level or at least the national touring level. And they'll come out and pay us a visit. Casey Kane, the nephew, actually runs out there. Clint Boyer's nephew runs out there. So they'll both come out and watch. And we keep trying to buck Boyer to get into one of them, but I think he's scared of them even though he won't admit it.
Now, you know, small track and dirt track racing, obviously it's a very loyal following. But I guess in a strict sense of the word, it's somewhat provincial, isn't it? I mean, because if we're going to say, well, go out and support your local dirt track, well, that means essentially the support is coming from people that kind of live in the area. Is there a sense that, you know, dirt track racing and that kind of thing is expanding? Or is it always going to just remain kind of provincial? You know, we have a track here and we have a cluster of following, and then, you know, you can move a half a state away and then there's a little track over there. In other words, you know, do you see dirt track and small track racing on the expansion or decline, or is it about status?
In your opinion? There's a couple different tangents to that story. The cool thing I think about dirt tracks is you actually do have a couple series that tour nationally with the Lucas Oil late models and the World of Outlaw sprint cars. They actually run all the way around the country, and you have the ability to follow those guys when they come to your area.
Okay.
Versus asphalt outside of the NASCAR National Touring Series, there isn't really a local grassroots-level touring series that runs on asphalt all the way around the country. So it's kind of interesting from that point that you can actually get a bigger following on the dirt side for guys that run at local short track. But at the same time, yes, it's very regionalized, especially the types of cars that you get in specific regions. Obviously, being up in the Northeast, you guys see big block modifieds all the time on dirt up there. You rarely see that in the South. We have UMP modifieds, which are similar. The engines are a little bit different. And that's starting to grow in this area just because, from a cost standpoint, a modified is cheaper to run than a late model. And you're getting a lot of these guys that are getting into it because they can go out, they can run at the same tracks. The purses aren't quite as high, but they can still get out and compete in the feature division at local racetracks and not break the bank. You go out west, you get into the wing sprint cars a little bit more. Midwest is the IMCA modified. Again, it's a different form or different sanctioning body of modified. But it seems like as people are transplanting and migrating around the country, they're starting to blend together a little bit more. And I feel like from the short track side of things, stuff is growing and expanding and moving because, A, there's people relocating, so they're bringing their passions with them. But B, the cost of racing is so much more, not only from a competitor standpoint, but from a fan standpoint. And you've got a lot of people that I hear from on my columns that say, I used to go to 12 cup races a year, now I'm going to 3. And I'm taking the money that I used to spend on those, and I'm going to Caraway Speedway, or I'm going to Lucas Oil Speedway in Missouri, or I'm out, you know, at Chico out in California or something. I think that's helping short track racing grow because people are pulling back from the cup level and going to their local tracks just because they're getting a lot more value out of their dollar.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Because we can't forget, you know, that, yeah, people are struggling. And we're trying to find the best bang for our entertainment dollar, which, you know, more and more there are fewer discretionary entertainment dollars available to many of us. To our audience out there, you're listening as we chat with Mike Neff, writer and announcer, track announcer. Feel free to climb aboard with us, 347-826-9964. That's the way to join the conversation as we chat with Mike. Now, Mike, I'd like to bring in a friend of ours here at Frat House Sports, a good pal of ours, Russell Lovett. He's coming to us from Georgia, and Russell is a pretty big dirt and short track enthusiast. Russell, good morning. Are you with us this morning?
Oh, yes, I'm with you this morning. Like I said, it's been tough with it. It's just like last night, a lot of people, he mentioned the part about the dirt tracking and all and the short tracking. This week here, in the past 2 weeks, car counts have all been down, but we've kind of figured out some graduations going on and then everybody hitting their vacations this week. But one thing about it, coming to the short track deal, they had a track up in North Georgia last night run twin 20s for $2,000 for the Crate Lake models. They had 30 Crate Lake models shoot and run that race last night. Now, that's outstanding to try to have that many cars shoot just to run for $2,000, which is just $1,000 more than their regular purse. And they said it was a good show last night at Bowie Speedway in North Georgia.
Wow, that's pretty outstanding. I mean, there you go. You talk about the local economy supporting, you know, the local track. That's very, very cool.
Oh yeah, it is, and it's like now. It's this weekend. A lot of them figure some track did shut down in Georgia for this week because of the vacations and all, and the Memorial Day. So everybody in my local area is going to be kicking up. And one thing we've got going on this weekend down there at Scribbler Motor Speedway, they're having the big, what they're calling the Fuel CT525 series, which was just at Hartwell Speedway, and they're big kind of around the southeast states of Georgia. They're coming down to Scriven to run the CT525 versus the 604. So we're looking at a good crowd to show up for that, and also we're showing that really the crate classes are really starting to take over down the south because of the fact it's a cheaper motor to run, and it's more governed a lot more to where you try to get to where you're getting out of hands of buying the $10,000-$50,000 motor to try to sit in race where it makes it more affordable for a lot of the racers, especially to run a late model with.
Mm-hmm.
No doubt about that. I'll chime in on that one, brother. You go out to run these super late models on dirt and you do a built motor, you're getting $35,000-$40,000 into that motor just to get competitive, let alone be top of the line. And you've got to freshen that thing up every 6 months. Where if you're running, or 4 months even, with running a crate, you can throw a crate in that thing, and as long as you do preventative maintenance on it, you can probably run that thing for the whole season without rebuilding it, and you're only spending about $8,000 to $12,000 to buy the thing.
Yeah, I know the average 604 runs, say, somewhere around $7,000 or $8,000 to buying it straight from Neesmith in Claxton, Georgia, which they also had the Neesmith series, and some of the guys have been able to send them off to like Hendren and send them other places up toward upper South Carolina, North Carolina, have them kind of redoctored on some a little bit to give them more horsepower. But a lot of these guys are still running the basic 604s, and that's what this series is hoping to try to bring them out with the CT525s, because they're trying to make the CT525 mover. The only person that can rebuild is where it's bought from, which is a Chevrolet dealership. And I think that's City Chevrolet up around North Carolina, where the 525 originated from. And they're trying to make it where they can't break into that motor like they were doing with the 604s when it came through Tegan and having so many rebuilders. So they're trying to keep that CT525 motor more under a standpoint where it can't get broke into like it was with the 604s with having so many rebuilders. And that's a good thing on there, because a 525 finished second last week in Cochran to a built motor, and a 604 finished fifth at Cochran Motor Speedway last week with 20 cars. So that's here there that a crate motor's on the right track and still run just as good with a built motor. Excuse me.
Now, you know, Russell, you had chatted with us last week about a product that they're using at dirt tracks, and particularly it was called Stay Wet XTC. And we checked out, pardon me, we checked out their website. I mean, that is going a long way to helping, promote and drive maybe some of these smaller dirt track venues, right? I mean, that's basically what the hope is, to continue to draw fans in. I mean, we're seeing NASCAR fans are more and more, you know, Mike mentioned it, you know, from the NASCAR fans he's chatted with, you know, folks that used to attend, you know, 10 races a year or 9 races a year are cutting back. So, you know, 3 races a year maybe is what they're doing at a NASCAR level. Tell us a little bit about, a little more about that Stay Wet XTC compound that's being used at some of these dirt tracks.
Well, one of the good things about it, you can sit there and take it and drink it, and it won't hurt you. And it's all natural for the environment and everything, to where it's, you won't have a problem with EPA. It won't show up on you. If they were to sit there and check tires, it won't show up in your tire compound and show your doctor the tires. And as a matter of fact, Dane Miller has been in Ohio this week with the World of Outlaw Sprint Cars up there toward Ohio deal. You ended up being on tracks up there, but unfortunately Mother Nature has took care of the shows up that way. But one thing about it, we used it in Cochran. We put about 3 gallons down there. The track held together some. It wasn't that bad. I went and talked to a lot of the drivers. We kept the groove up high and made it where they would sit there and work to the bottom to make the bottom on their own where they would have a wide groove. And, hey, by the end of the night, the bomber division was running 2 and 3 wide. No problem. They was passed on the inside and outside. It sit there and opened up a groove, and the track still stayed together, considering we didn't get a chance to plow it under and get it up under the track surface itself. So, to me, it really paid off real good. The track show pitched it to some guys last night. It's Waynesboro Raceway. I said, this is what the track looked like after probably several hundred laps of hot laps, qualifying 4 classes, which was probably close to 100 cars, in heat races for the lower division, which was probably another 25, 30 laps. And you got to figure there's probably 200-300 laps of features put on it. And I said, this is what 1 and 2 look like. The guy said, yeah, I can't believe the track looks that good. I said, man, I said the bottom was still tacky. The only place it kind of dry slip was way up at the top where you're off the track. And I said, this is what we do with putting it on top. He said, I sure wish this track would go to it. And I said, and then the track never really got that bad dusty.
Mm-hmm.
So it takes as far as it just takes time to get it in there like it needs to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well,
interesting.
Cool thing about that, the cool mm-hmm. thing about that product, too, variable you have in dirt track racing is obviously the track. When you've got an asphalt track, it's the same surface week in and week out with very little change other than just the rubber that's on it. But as far as the Stay Wet XTC goes, your dirt tracks, depending on humidity and the heat of the day and how much rain you've had during the week and all that kind of stuff, the track will vary and you'll have different surfaces. And it's kind of the science of dirt track racing, but it's also a hindrance. And when you put this Stay Wet on it, it gives you a much more consistent track week in and week out. And I think that's the cool thing about the compound, is that you're not having to deal with drivers coming in 1 week griping that the thing's slicked off and dusted up, and the next week it's too wet and it's too slimy. You're going to get a consistent track week in and week out, and I think that's better not only for the competitors from a racing standpoint, but I think from a car count standpoint. I think you're going to get more guys showing up knowing what the track's going to be like week in and week out.
And that is so true. And like I said, this was Cochran. We did it on it. And what hurt us so bad was we had a wind come in during the day, and everybody knows the wind on a dirt track, I dried out fast. We were sitting there trying to fight wind conditions, sun bearing down in 1 and 2, the wind come across 3 and 4 in the back. It was a real fight to try to keep it, considering we were able to get on track pretty like we needed till Sunday because of having a race that Saturday in Swainsboro that we attended. So, to me, we were well satisfied with results. I've talked to a lot of the drivers. They said they was pleased with it, and they was glad the track held together like it did. They said it was the best shape it's been, and we're trying to get more and more tracks incorporated to help cut the dust down. It slowly cuts the dust down, but we try to make them understand they need to get it in before the July heat gets here, to go ahead and try to get it in the ground, say 6-7 inches in the ground, get it soaked in there to where the moisture slowly rises to the top. We can't cut dust out completely because we can't fuss with nature. Nature's going to do what she wants to do, and man above
yeah.
is he can do his job
yeah.
too. So, but we're just trying to do our best to get it under control as much as possible, to where the fans are not going home with a half inch thick of dust on them sitting in the stands, and the drivers not sitting there having to try to figure out where they're at on the track with so
mm-hmm.
much dust. We're looking at it as a safety issue, as well as an issue that it'll help bring in more cars and possibly more fans, trying to get some dust control to it.
Yeah, absolutely. Almost a safety, but almost a health thing as well, right, Russell? I mean, if you've got asthma or COPD and you're going to your local dirt track and that's kicking up a lot of dust in that, boy, I would think, you know, I was chatting with Sidekick about that at the top of the show. That's got to be, boy, a real bummer, right? So, I mean, obviously just bringing down the amount of dust that's in the air is probably very good for people's health, too.
Yes, it is considered. I am an asthma and COPD sufferer and all. And to me, the more the dust gets down, the more it's a lot easier for me to be able to attend them and all, and, which I'm going to be there regardless. I just deal with getting me a good shower some after the race, get my sinuses back cleared out, then I'm ready to go. And, but yes, cutting back on that dust does make a big, good standpoint because, like a lot of people said, years ago you could water a track when you had late models at 600 horsepower. Well, now they're running 900 horsepower, and it's a lot different, and the tracks have changed a lot since then. So it's not like it used to be back in the 80s. You sit and throw water on it that Saturday and be good. Now it's been changed so much for the horsepower, the late models sitting there drying it out when they hit the turns and they get on the bars. So this here is really something we're trying to use to help cut that back, as like I said, help this issue and everything else. And it's something we're really trying to push and support real good, and I'm starting to work with some of the tracks as well where we can try to get it on out more and get more tracks on so they can understand the benefits of it.
Very, very cool. How much product do you need? I'm just curious, Russell, when you put that stuff down. How much product for a 3/8 mile are you in need of for initial treatment? In terms
initial
of like gallons.
In initial treatment you're gonna need at least 3 gallons to start with, and then you could probably go to
that's not that
three
much
gallons.
Really, is it?
It's not that the cost is kind of high, but really and truly, is 3 gallons to start with, and maybe you can go to a half a gallon every other week or something like that, depending on how you order your track. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you start off with 3 gallons the first week to get it in there, then you can slowly back it down to where you're just using a half a gallon to a gallon a week, or to a point a gallon like in Scriven, they use a gallon every other week. But they race every 2 weeks, but they only use a gallon because they didn't already got into the track so much. They're able to not to use as much of it already.
Yeah, very cool. Very cool. Good way to keep promoting, as we say, the local dirt tracks, you know, and the local economy. Mike, I'm going to bring it back to you for a minute. A friend of yours indicated in a comment that I just saw that you he considers you the best track announcer he's ever heard. And further, well, why don't you tell our audience about last night the call at East Lincoln and why there was no Victory Lane interview.
Well, the way it works at dirt tracks, most of the time the thing they always check before you are allowed to go to Victory Lane is they make sure that you've made minimum weight. So they got scales there that are kind of like scales you use at a truck stop or whatever, where they just pull on, they check the weight, and then they send you to Victory Lane. And for some reason, this young kid that won the stock four class comes off the track. It's our first race of the night, pulls onto the pit lane and stopped and was like carrying on conversations with assorted people. Random people are walking up to the car, and we're trying to keep the show moving along because we try really hard to have everybody out of there before 11 o'clock at night. And you gotta have to have the pace kept up so we get all our features in a couple hours. Well, he pulls into pit lane and he's carrying on conversations and people are coming by the car, and all the other top five cars from the race have gone across the scales and they're clear.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like having a social confab in the middle of the pits. And so by the time he gets onto the scales, the next feature is already lined up, ready to go. And Richie Kepley, our race director, is like, sorry, man, we got to get this show moving. And so they fired off the next group, and I just said over to PA, I said, sorry, folks, we're not going to have a Victory Lane for the stock fours because it took our driver a week and a half to get to the scales and get checked up. So we're going to go on with the show, and maybe if we can fit him in later, we'll talk to him. But it's just my style. I call it like I see it.
Uh-huh.
We've had the occasional complaint come over the telephone at the tower just because, I want to say it was about a month and a half ago, we had a race going on, and it was for like seventh place it was a great race. Guys were side by side, but the one guy got kind of out of shape coming out of two, and it's the last lap, and they're coming down to turn three, and he's literally like two or three car lengths out. There's no way he's going to make this pass. And to quote what I said, the PA was, he just lost his damn mind because he went straight into turn three and never lifted and literally just drove over the top of the car that was in sixth place in front of him.
Wow.
And so they had people calling up and going, the PA announcer just used the word damn on the rate on the PA.
Uh-oh.
I'm like,
because
he lost his damn mind. So I
told
him, like,
no.
I said, you suck again. But it may ruffle some feathers the wrong way, but I get a lot of people appreciate it too because they say that my announcing style is more like a fan. I take the time to go through the field. I let them know who all the people are in the field and where they're running. If we get a caution and I get a chance to kind of poll the fans, I ask, you know, do they think this person's going to win or that guy's going to win, guys that are running near the front. And you get the cheers and it gives them some, you know, some input into the evening. So that's always fun. But I just try to keep it real, and I announce with the same voice that I talk with you guys on. I'm not one of these guys that has an announcer voice. And
right.
I've never understood those guys that you're talking to you on the phone, they talk like this. But when they get on the PA, it's suddenly diaphragm. Oh, it gets protected, and we got to do this. And we have. I was like, dude, just talk. Everybody hears you, and you're not. They're not feeling like you're on an infomercial.
Like those old Sunday.
And,
those guys.
Although I will say, I love that dude that did those announcements. And my favorite promo that I ever heard was for US 30 Dragway, Northern Indiana, up in the Northwest region. And a guy was on there, and it was one of those things, we're having like rocket cars that weekend, I think. And he gets on the radio, and he's like, Sunday, you got to be there, fire breathing, you know, 4,000 horsepower. It's going to be the greatest show. If you're not there, you're either in jail or you're dead. And if you're in jail, break out, because you want to make sure you're at the show. That was the greatest promo I have ever heard. You're either dead or in jail, and if you're in jail, break out.
Oh, that's too funny. That is great stuff. Now, listen, folks, you're out there. Give us a call. Reach out. We've still got Mike Neff, Motorsports Media member, writer at frontstretch.com, writer at race22.com. He's with us for a few more minutes. If you have a question, don't hesitate to give us a call, 347-826-9964. Anything for Mike, sidekick? Any questions?
Sure. For Mike and Russell, since, you know,
okay,
they're both kind of down, you know, down at that dirt track level and stuff. You know, Mike was talking a little bit earlier about how, you know, you have people that move around and take little bits from their local track and, you know, take it someplace else, and you kind of get the, you know, it's starting to get this kind of melting pot thing going. But let me ask, you know, we see in, say, like, you know, football and stuff where you have kids that are, you know, at the high school level and, you know, they, you know, they'll up and move to go to this town because there's a better football program there. Do you see that at that level in racing with the dirt track where you have people that say, hey, you know, I'm in, you know, this little town and, you know, I'm beating everybody at this track, and the family says, you know what, maybe we need to move down to, say, Kannapolis or some point, you know, this other hub where it's a little bit more, there's a little bit more activity and, you know, a little bit more visibility that, you know, do you see that as well?
I don't know about on the dirt track level as much as the asphalt level. With local dirt track racing, there's not that pinnacle national touring series where you're going to go run for millions of dollars. You know, the Lucas Oil is probably the most lucrative touring series on dirt, but there's not really a hub of operations for super late models on dirt. But from the asphalt level, absolutely. You get a lot of people that they show the success at their local track and they feel like they have the chance to make it on a national stage. They will relocate to the Charlotte area for a handful of reasons. You've got the NASCAR Technical Institute, which is a school that kind of teaches the ins and outs of racing from the pit crew side of things and the engineering side a little bit. But you also have University of North Carolina Charlotte, which has a well-recognized motor racing program for engineering students. And you're getting more and more guys. One that quickly comes to mind, Matt McCall, who is now the crew chief on Jamie McMurray's car, is a graduate from UNCC school. But you get a lot of these drivers that are standing and embracing the fact that it's a much more engineering-laden sport, at least asphalt racing side is. And they're relocating to try to get into that school and go through that training because it gives them the engineering side to be able to communicate better with their teams when they're setting up their cars. But you're also in the area, and the team owners are paying attention to these schools. The guys that are working on these crews know the people that are in these schools, and they see them at their local tracks when they're running on Fridays and Saturday nights. So when they're mining for talent, both driving talent and crew talent, being in the North Carolina, especially the Charlotte area, gives them that exposure to the guys that are the decision makers that bring people onto these teams. So from the NASCAR and the national asphalt side of things, absolutely they come down here. Dirt, not mm-hmm. quite so much because, again, it's spread all over the whole country, so there's not really that general focused area where you have 95% of the NASCAR teams right here in Charlotte.
Right. And when you say that NASCAR, you're talking about that NASCAR Institute. That's the MMI school there that's in Charlotte, correct?
I believe it's UTI, if I'm not mistaken. But
right.
It's the same kind of thing. But, yeah,
yep.
They've got a deal. It's just like the other two or three UTI schools across the country, but they do have a specific program. And if you're in the top, I want to say it's the top 4% of your class, when you get to the last year of the school, you have the option to go into a NASCAR-focused program. And they get more into the specifics of race car engineering.
Right. Good stuff.
Yeah, very good stuff. Now we have, I believe we have our crew chief, our regular crew chief, Brandon. Brandon, are you on the line with us this morning? Yeah, good morning. Yeah, good morning. Say hello. Say hello to our guest and friend here, Mike Neff.
Hi, Mike Neff. How you doing?
I'm sure fantastic, Brandon. How are you, brother?
Good. I'm sure you probably heard this a million times. You know, you have another Mike Neff out there in motorsports, right?
I do indeed, and that's another really cool story, kind of a two-pronged story. When they first announced, or shortly after they announced, the four wide nationals at Charlotte, and they had VMAX pretty much done with construction, and they were getting ready to run the very first race, they brought a bunch of the NHRA guys into the media center at the Coca-Cola 600 for kind of a Q&A, you know, feel good, promote the whole deal. And Mike Neff was one of the guys. And so when you're in a media center and they call on you, you have to say your name and your affiliation before you ask your question. And so they called on me, and I was actually asking Antron Brown the question, but I said, Mike Neff, frontstretch.com. And as soon as I said that, all the heads on the dais turned and looked at Mike. And his eyes got really big, and it was just kind of a funny moment. And so I was planning on, you know, when the press conference ended, I was going to go introduce myself anyway. But he literally, like, ran up to me and was like, hey, great to meet you. I've never met somebody with the same name before, which I thought was just bizarre because I've met 7 or 8 people with the same name in my travels around. In fact, when I first moved to Charlotte, there was another Mike Neff that lived in my same neighborhood. We would get each other's mail and stuff. So I thought that was kind of interesting. But last year, we started covering NHRA more extensively on Front Stretch. And at the October race, we had, you know, access to the teams, and we were going to be doing a few different interviews and stuff. And I said, I really wanted to interview Mike Neff for a Tech Talk segment. And so we got that together, and Mike Neff interviewed Mike Neff. I thought that was a really fun angle that we did on Tech Talk last year.
Hey, you ought to share your hookup with us so we can have the other Mike Neff on too. We got.
Dude, I'm telling you, call John Force Racing. Call John Force Racing. The coolest thing about NHRA is that they love the media. They love getting any exposure they can. And if you guys talk to them, I mean, I couldn't believe, you know, we're going in there. It was the first true race that we had actually covered. And it's like, you want to talk to John Force? Absolutely. We'll set that up. You want Courtney Force? Here's Ron Taft. You know, you want to talk to Don Schumacher? I mean, it just literally the biggest names, all their stars, we had full access to. If we wanted to talk to them, the PR people from either the teams or the series made it happen at the drop of a hat. And it's just, it's awesome to have that kind of exposure when you're used to dealing with the media horde that there is around NASCAR weekends. There's so many more people and there's so much more demand on their time from a corporate hospitality side that getting time with the stars is extremely difficult. On the NHRA side, they will make time for you, no problem. And that's, again, the cool draw about that is that every ticket's a pit pass, and you go down in the pits and you can shake hands and get your picture taken with your favorite driver just about any race weekend.
Yeah, that's true. We have done that quite often.
But, yeah, give John Force Racing a call. I guarantee you they'll put Mike Knapp on the phone with you guys, no problem.
Wow.
All right, we're making note of it. Frat House Mike has made note of it. Now, Frat House Mike indicates he has reached out and has not had success in the past. So, but we'll try it. We'll try it, Mike. We'll try to reach out to him again.
I will get up with you guys this week and give you the name of the contact that we have, and I promise you they will hook you up.
Well, that would be outstanding. We would greatly, greatly appreciate that because, we do like our NASCAR here at Frat House Sports, but I know that Frat House Mike himself, I know that Brandon, absolutely try to catch every NHRA weekend. Now, of course, we don't have one this weekend, but we will next weekend. And you can bet NHRA is going to be playing. We tape the stuff, DVR it, and yeah, it's a pretty big deal. It's a pretty big deal in motorsports following here at Frat House NHRA.
Well, and then, you know, JF, you talk about, you know, Juan Pablo McShane over there. You know, he's the biggest fanboy for JFR Racing. You know, we always play this sound drop anytime we talk about John Force Racing with Mike involved.
Man crush.
He does love JFR.
That's awesome.
Well, listen, we want to thank you, Mike, again for coming on board and chatting with us. You've been very generous with your time. Your stories have been a lot of fun, and it's great to learn more about you. And we're hoping we can keep the contact open with you. To our listening audience, once again, we've been chatting with Mike Neff, Motorsports Media member, writer at FrontStretch.com. Where else can we find you? Once again, Mike, race22.com, right? You're a contributor over there. Where else can we find you? Are you on Twitter? Shall we give you a follow?
I'm on Twitter, MNF Short Track. I'm on Facebook. Should be under facebook.com/MNF Short Track as well. I show up every Friday morning on WBAG 1150 out of somewhere around Apex, Rutherfordton, somewhere, or not Rutherfordton, Burlington, up in North Carolina with Tyler Williams. Once a month or so, I'm usually on Trade and Paint with Jim Noble and Chocolate Myers, and pretty much anytime anybody wants to talk. I am truly grateful that you guys have me on. I'm more than happy to come on any time. You just let me know ahead of time. I would be glad to be on and talk because talking is what I do. So I'm more than happy to do it. So the thing that I tell the people, whoever you support, get out and support your local racetrack because local racetracks are going away because housing developments and strip malls make more money than racetracks do. And we see it with Waterford up in Northeast right now. It's going up for sale. Rockingham's probably going to be sold here in the not-too-distant future. North Wilkesboro is falling apart. Get out there and support that local track because that's where the racers of the future come from. And if the local tracks go away, there's no place for them to come from. And you get a great value for your money. I mean, it's East Lincoln Speedway is $11 to get in the gate. And you see somewhere in the neighborhood of a dozen heat races and six or seven features every week. Yeah, you get a hot dog for $2. I mean, you can't beat it.
Outstanding. Outstanding stuff. You heard it, folks. You heard it. You heard it from the man, and that's absolutely the right thing to do. Get out and support your local tracks. Russell Lovett down there in Georgia, you would say the same thing, right, buddy?
Well, of course I do. I mean,
support that local economy.
Support that local economy, and the best thing you can do, if you don't have anybody that's ever been to a dirt track, or a local asphalt track, whatever, short track racing, take them with you. That way you get somebody else hooked. Or they can bring a friend in next week. Wherever you, as long as you can keep getting more and more hooked on it, you can bring more and more people with you. So always, if you don't have a, if you got a friend that's never been to a dirt track or a short track racing, take with you, let them get hooked on it. They're going to want to bring somebody else, and that way we can help grow the fan base, because that's what it's going to take to keep it going. We've got to grow that fan base, and that's the best way to do it.
Outstanding. Mike, once again, thank you so much for your time. We're going to let you go, buddy, so that, you know, we've kind of monopolized your time here. We do thank you again for your generosity and stopping by the frat house and the frat house garage and sharing with us. We will be looking forward to absolutely reaching out and having you again as a guest, I hope.
Thank you all so much. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. Do a shot for me.
Yep, we will do, buddy. And don't forget to kick the tires.
Absolutely.
Good stuff. Very, very, very good stuff. Boy, what a joy. What a pleasure it was. We actually had a guest this week. So nice job. Thank you to Mike Neff for coming on board with us. Now we have Brandon with us. I believe we still have Sidekick with us. Fred House Mike is up in the booth. Let me ask you this. Oh, I never did ask Mike who his pick is. Hey, Russell, before we let you go today, you got a pick for NASCAR, since we're still chatting some NASCAR? You got a pick for a winner today in NASCAR?
Yeah, I know he's starting deep in the field, but like I said, I'm always going to be a junior fan. That's straight how it is. I'm going with 88 Junior or anyone in a Ford. As long as it can be a Ford, if he don't win, I'd be more than happy, because I'm also a Ford man by heart.
Okay, so we got a Ford. Yeah, go ahead, Sidekick.
So, I was going to say, so Russell, you'll be rooting for me, right? In my Piggly Wiggly goodies headache powder Ford Fusion?
Hey, if you can bring it to the front, go ahead.
How the way Dave drives, you never know.
I just love the
spot. Y'all got to remember one thing years back, and a lot of people they used to hit on me real bad, but it's like I tell them, it was a shame that when Billy and all of them were sitting there winning with the Fords, NASCAR was there to make another rule for the Ford, another rule for the Ford. And it's like, the only reason why they make another rule for the Ford is because they're trying to get where the Chevy could have the advantage and start winning, because they're tired of Elliott and everybody else out there in the Ford whipping their tail. So what they're doing is they're making a new rule for the Fords each week to try to slow them down. But hey, they couldn't help it. Elliott was just that good. He couldn't help it. He lapped the whole field one race, and hey, that's just how it was. And that's, in a way, at times, you can still see if one starts getting ahead of the other, they start coming up with a new rule to try to send them to break it back. Yeah, they don't try to keep them together. But it's like, hey, are they trying to help government motors out, which I call Chevrolet, GM, and all that, because everybody knows how that was. I said, yeah, that's all it is. Now they're letting Chevrolet win because they're trying to get them out of the debt with the government and all. It's just, they're just trying to hold the Ford back for a while, but eventually Ford's going to be right there with them again. They just think this is just some of this government motor deal going on right here, and that's what NASCAR's trying to appease. So you never know how it is out there with them. They may write the script, and Kurt Busch may win him. I met Kyle Busch may win him a race this week or within the next 2 weeks, where they ain't got to worry about him having his thing to get them on in because he missed on the race. That way they know they can kind of throw that to the wayside. So you never know what's going to happen in NASCAR. It's just like a soap opera. You never know.
Yeah, absolutely right. And you know what, Kyle Busch, I would agree with you on that, Russell. Kyle Busch, I could almost see him do that and get a win today. Nothing would surprise me, quite frankly.
Please, because you got to look at it. If he were to sit there and win, that win means that they don't have to give him that
out
with the races with the injured, just like it was with Kurt being out for the domestic dispute. I mean, it's that way it's no longer needed.
Yeah, right, exactly. His eligibility would be essentially, well, close to essentially clinched if he can get himself a win. And yeah, I mean, there's a lot of reason to like certainly Kyle Busch. And listen, all of the Toyotas, they're finally all sort of getting in line. Toyotas are starting to come on. We said at the top of the show, amazingly, they've replaced Ford. Now Ford actually only has a couple of wins in the manufacturers' race of the championship. Chevy's out front, but now with a third victory, Toyota is actually running second.
That's true. That's something that you can never count out with Toyotas and all. And let me give y'all something that's kind of a breath on that. Have y'all ever looked at a Toyota pickup and a Ford truck? If you remember back in the days when Toyota first started coming out, if you look at it and some of the Ford Rangers, they had the same front end.
Mm-hmm.
They were taking the front end that Ford had with the shock and the spring. Instead of being through each other, they were set off to the side. Ford came out with that first in their Ford Ranger. But if you notice, Toyota started using similar kind of front end. But if you notice, you can take a Toyota and a Ford wheels, and they'll interchange between them as well as with a Nissan on a regular street vehicle, because the bolt pattern was so similar.
Wow.
Wow. Yeah, interesting. Mm-hmm. Well,
so that shows you just how much they all together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, on the, I guess, well, that's specifically for the trucks, though, not automobiles. We're just talking trucks in that case. Well, real good. Go ahead.
You never know. I mean, has anybody ever tried taking... Well, I know they hadn't really never tried, but I know on the trucks, yes, but you got to figure there's probably some of the stuff within the cars on the wheels, but nobody really tried to see if they would interchange. There's a good possibility back in the early 80s when they were both coming out like the good, there's a good possibility that some of the stuff could have interchanged with it, because I know there was time my brother would order Ford parts from a Toyota truck because they would interchange, but he didn't say the same could have been done toward the cars. That was something somebody never really probably thought about back then. And into now, from the similarities.
Well, very good. Russell, what's on deck for you for the rest of your day before we let you go? Any local track racing today for you, or are you going to just sit back and barbecue? What's on your agenda?
Taking it easy today. I had that double race last weekend, and with the holiday Monday, had a tough work week. Got to get ready. I've got a big project going on this week at work. It's going to take a lot of my time, a lot of travel. Okay. So I'm going to sit back today, take it easy, cook me a little something for supper, and sit back and take it easy, probably stream the NASCAR race for a little while and go visit with some of the neighbors. This is going to be more or less a relaxing day. That's what I tried to use Sunday for.
Yeah, good for you. Good for you. Well, buddy, there's a cold one for you. We always appreciate you calling in, Russell. Thanks so much. And feel free to do it. You know where we're
going. Yo, man, we love you.
You can find us here most Sundays, unless it's a Saturday night race, in which case we'll come to you on Friday. But we'll keep you in the loop. We'll keep you linked in, and we hope to hear from you again next week. Enjoy your Sunday, Russell.
All right, y'all guys do the same, and let's keep this frat house motorsports going and growing, because I got a feeling now that we've kind of mixed some of the dirt along with the asphalt and the NASCAR, I think we really got something growing here.
I think you're right, buddy. I like the way you think. All right. Say goodbye to our friend Russell, everybody, and we'll catch up. Hopefully, Russell will catch up with us again next week.
All right. We got time for some fantasy, right?
Yeah, I guess we could chat some fantasy. Absolutely. You know, we're down there in Dover now. You were trackside, is that right, Brandon?
I was.
Right.
This morning.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're on the way home to the frat house to watch the race today.
Okay.
We're not in attendance, but we were there.
Oh, okay.
Getting a little flavor last evening and
mm-hmm.
camp out and stuff, and yeah, so it's all good.
Well, what do you think? You know, that one car team, Furniture Row, they're just doing the unthinkable, and that's competing every week. It's just astounding to me when you think of one car teams, and there's the 78 guy. There's rumor that they might actually expand. Has anybody heard this? And they'll try and expand to a two car team next year. What's anybody's thought on that?
Well, I think it'd be great for them if they could do it. And I'm surprised they would have any issues securing sponsorship because they've been running so well. I mean, last year they were kind of down, but the year before that, Kurt Busch, drove that car real well up front all the time. And this year, Truex is insane. Actually, he kind of started at the end of last year. They started getting it together, and, he's carried it into this season. And, not to give too much away, but Martin Truex Jr. might eat my dust stick this week, so I think he's going to win. He had his first win, NASCAR Sprint Cup win at that track, at Dover. He's always in front of Dover, and my guess is Truex is the winner for today. That's my pick anyway.
Well, there goes my pick.
Uh-oh.
Sorry, Dave.
Son of
Now listen, boys. Don't fight. Don't fight. You can both pick the same guy. It's okay.
Well, then how do I make up any ground on this guy
if
I pick the same guy?
I know, but you both get the same. I mean, it's no different than any other fantasy. Sometimes you wind up with the same guys on your roster. You know, these kind of things do happen.
It might be a trifecta. It might be a trifecta,
I even found a way to get him on my actual fantasy this week. I actually got Truex running on my mean fantasy team with Harvick, Keselowski, and Reagan, and that Mrs. Danica Patrick, Ricky Stenhouse.
You took Ricky Patrick? You got Ricky Patrick
running?
Yeah,
I took Ricky Patrick. Yeah,
well,
we're
you know what?
The Fords are running a little better.
I was going to say, not for anything. All at once, you know, the last couple of weeks, Roush, you know, the Roush program seems to maybe be gelling a little bit. And Ricky Patrick, if I'm not mistaken, is, like, coming from someplace in the top 10 from the pole position, right? I mean, he did qualify well, and I think Biffle's likewise
up there too, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's not completely, I guess that's not completely insane. One other sort of over the pit wall kind of loose lug nut story. Jennifer Jo Cobb, she was driving her truck there on Friday night. I don't know how she forgot, but did anybody notice that she hopped out of her truck after she got what she believes to be spun into the wall by Tyler Reddick? She hopped out of her truck and waved at him and hollered at him and stepped out onto the track. That is a mad penalty. And I guess she claims she forgot. We kind of remember last year with the Canandaigua thing. NASCAR came down and said, hey, you stay in your vehicle. You're not allowed out of it. Wow.
Yeah, that's bad. I didn't see that. We'll probably hear something about that on Tuesday.
Mm-hmm. Evidently,
well,
she
was called to the hauler.
I was going to say she was encouraged to visit the hauler for that. Yeah. I found that to be, I mean, I understand. I can certainly understand the, you know, the passion there. And, I mean, she was saying, you know, their budget's like $300,000. She owns the truck. She has to pay for everything herself for the truck. So I can understand $300,000 versus, you know, other teams where they're dropping a couple of million dollars. So it's you know, apples to oranges from that standpoint. But I was just astounded. I'll be curious to see what the sanction is because, you know, a lot of folks out there in social media world, you know, are saying, well, gee, you know, if it was Danica Patrick, they probably wouldn't have even, you know, there wouldn't have been a big deal made about it. So I don't know.
Well,
I just
that's
throw
because
it out
nobody
there.
Respects her.
Yeah.
Which goes
yeah,
to yeah, wave yeah. a sandwich. Come get your sandwich. I got your sandwich ready. You know, Jennifer, you know,
oh,
Cobb's the real deal. You know.
Oh, that is that is just too funny. All right. Well, what do we want to do here? I guess we want to jump around. We can kick off some fantasy chat here. I'm just looking for. Do we have the sound drop there, Fred House Mike? Or there we go. Yeah, let's do it. Let's chat a little bit of fantasy down there at the Monster Mile. FedEx 400 benefiting Autism Speaks. That's going to be kicking up right, you know, right around 1 o'clock. So this is a nice early afternoon race for us. Sidekick, give us your best fantasy pick for today in Dover.
All right. The people you do not want on your roster this week are...
That's my roster. Yeah, that's the choices I made. Go ahead.
I'm already conceding this season. It's just not in the cards, I think.
Uh-oh.
I'm just thinking
saying?
Up the joint. Yeah.
Yeah, just saying.
So, like I said I wanted to retire last season. I should have done it.
Yeah.
So, okay. So, for the show team, we're going to go with the number 4 of Kevin Harvick, the number 48 of Jimmy Johnson, the number 78 of Martin Truex Jr., the number 13 of Casey Mears, and my lucky dog will be the number 38, David Gilliland, with my winner and manufacturer being Truex Jr. and Chevy.
Good. Okay. I like that.
Mm-hmm. Now, mm-hmm. on my personal team, it's very similar. It's going to be the number 4 of Kevin Harvick, only because these guys are too freaking expensive anymore to get.
Yeah,
rid of.
You can't almost let them go.
You
know? I know.
Mm-hmm. Now, I did make a change, and I got, because Junior's got moved to the back, I dropped him and I picked up Jimmy Johnson. Also, the 78 of Truex Jr., similar to the, you know, the show roster. But I'm running the number 9 of Sam Hornish Jr. and the 46 of Michael Annette.
Mm-hmm.
With Truex Jr. and Chevy is my winner and my manufacturer. For mm-hmm. my Eat My Dust pick, because I need to be different, I'm going to go with the number 4 Kevin Harvick. Because I need to try and make some ground.
Yeah, well, that was okay. That was Brandon's pick last week. Brandon had Harvick last week as his driver to win. Okay. All right. Sounds good. So we got a 78 on board, and sounds like a pretty interesting couple of rosters to consider for those of you folks out there playing fantasy. That's Sidekick's recommendation. Now, Brandon, before I ask you what your pick is, I'm just curious. What exactly is your location at this point? Are you out of Delaware and into Pennsylvania at this point or not?
Yes, we are on the Blue Ridge, coming up on the Schuylkill Expressway. We should probably be home, I would say,
within
a half hour.
You're not far at all. Okay, very cool. All right,
we're rolling along.
You want to go ahead?
I kind of gave everything away, but I'll give you real quick. I got Harvick.
Yeah, run it down again for the listeners.
Harvick, Truex Jr., Keselowski, Stenhouse, and David Reagan with Chevy and Truex Jr., and Truex Jr. with my desk pick.
All right, cool. All right, sounds good.
And I do feel good, though, about Toyota, just as an offshoot. I think you're going to see Kyle Busch up front a lot. Clint Bowyer runs real well at this track as well. So I think you're going to see a good showing. You know, you could see a lot of Denny Hamlin. They all run well here, so. And of course, Concrete Carl, we got him here too. So, I think you could see a Toyota themed race here. So, I have a feeling Fred F. Mike's team's going to be heavy in that department.
So, let me ask you, Brandon, how is the Frat House Sports Secrets Spiced Rum Toyota pickup running today?
Oh, it's running great. We're just sailing along. Not too much traffic, and we're just hauling. I slowed down a little bit while I'm on the phone, but I don't go quite as quickly.
All right, shall we bring in Frat House Mike? Frat House Mike, you want to holler at us? Give us your fantasy options.
Absolutely, sure. I'd be more than happy to do it. Hey, a couple of observations I'm going to make here too on my roster, which, by the way, this roster, I feel very, very good.
You're an
idiot. Real strong team.
Oh, good for you.
Real strong team right here. But I really a very interesting observation about it, and we can bring it up here in a moment. But no, here we go, and it was insinuated, heavy JGR, of course. We got Hamlin, we got Kyle Busch, we got Edwards. Truex and David Reagan. You just can't get away from Truex and Reagan yet because their value hasn't dropped. But talking about values, very interesting observation here. Carl Edwards, who has run every single race so far this season, obviously, and of course got his first win last week, valued at $21. Kyle Busch, who has only run one race all season long, valued at 25.
Huh? He had beautiful hair.
No, he doesn't. And I'm going to stick with my Eat My Dust. It's Truex. I'm going with Truex.
All right, y'all heard that now? He's going with Truex. All right. All right. Well, because I'm so absolutely terrible at this game, I'm not even sharing, you know, the roster anymore. However, I have here in my hand a coin, and I've got to just flip the coin. Because my Eat My Dust pick, the first name of the driver is definitely Kyle. So let's flip and see which way it's going to go. And the coin is in the air, and it came up Larson. I'm going
crazy
with Kyle. I must be. I'm sure I am, actually. I'm going with Kyle Larson today. It could have easily been Kyle Busch. But that's going to be my Eat My Dust pick for Frat House Mike, of course, needs to know that because he's going to create the graphic and put it up on our Facebook page at some point today.
In fact, it's almost done. It's almost ready to go.
Yeah, right, exactly. I guess you just have to actually put the picks in. So I've got Larson. You've got 78, Frat House Mike. Likewise, 78 for Brandon. And Harvick? Is that what I heard then?
Number four for Dave. Yeah, for sidekick.
Yep.
Okay. All right,
and
very good. And
fan of the show, Liz, has posted her roster.
Oh, okay, there you go.
Liz, what do we have?
Share
it up.
Liz is going with the number 47 of A.J. Allmendinger.
He's the got 70... the exact setup of Truex Jr., I heard. And they're really hoping... that it's going to translate for AJ this week, that apparently they got together. You know, they're both sort of one-car teams, and they shared, and he's got the exact setup of Truex. So good for AJ. Hopefully she'll get a win with him.
Yep.
Who else?
Yep, and then she's got Truex on there. She's got Kurt Busch, Harvick, Reagan with Truex to win, and Chevy is her manufacturer.
So there you go. Little applause for our Race Trim Motorsports friend Liz. Thanks for sharing that over with us, Liz. All right, gentlemen, I guess we're just about done. We can wrap up and get on out of here. We're going to be going green flag, what do you figure, right around 1:15, 1:18 this afternoon, all things being equal. We are expecting Brandon home. Before we let you go, sidekick, give us an update. When do we expect to see you back in the friendly confines of Pennsylvania?
Well, the hauler will be picked up on Tuesday and packed up on Wednesday. I will be back in the area on Friday.
Okay.
And the unload party Saturday, is that right?
Yeah, I was gonna say when do we all have to, maybe we're gonna all get together and help you offload the hauler, right?
Yep, that'll be Saturday.
All right, cool.
Probably Saturday.
Yeah,
right?
You got it.
There's not a whole lot. Yeah. My mom doesn't have a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So
all right, real good.
We'll give you a hand.
So.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. We'll be around for that, and it'll be fun having you back in town, buddy, because we're all looking to do, I guess we're going to have some kind of, hopefully, a frat house get-together, maybe sometime around Father's Day, I believe is what
I think June 20th, bookmark June 20th there, sidekick. I think there's going to be a bit of a shindig going on to celebrate Father's.
All right.
Yeah, we're going to hope to.
It's Saturday before Father's Day.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Yeah,
and
it'll
be the bomb, diggity bomb. So be sure to be there, be square.
Yeah. Well, I will be bringing some pork steaks back with me, so.
Oh.
Okay. I like it. All right, I guess that's it. We're going to wrap it up. I want to give a shout-out and a thank you to our special guests today, writer and dirt track announcer Mike Neff. What a pleasure it was having Mike with us, chatting basically all kinds of motorsports, from the short track and dirt track side up to the NASCAR. We even touched on NHRA. give Mike a look. Give Mike a like. He is available. You can find him over on Twitter at mneff short track on Twitter. You can find him on Facebook, certainly at frontstretch.com. Give him a read. Give him a like. Very good guy. We're hoping to have him back with us. Also, a nice thank you to our frat house sports friend, Russell Lovett, down in Georgia. He, too, joined us this morning and gave us a holler talking NASCAR and dirt track stuff. And, of course, thanks to you, Sidekick. We're looking forward to having you back with us in the flesh, probably this time next week. Thanks to Brandon on the road. We'll be looking for you to pull in, hopefully, in the next 20, 30 minutes. So safe travels to you as well. And, of course, many, many thanks to our own Fred House Mike, who was up in the booth. Running the board for us and helping us get through another broadcast. So until we all meet again next week, we want to wish everybody a happy Sunday. Enjoy the race. Don't forget to always kick the tires and have one on us. Catch you all next Sunday.